The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC here on ESPN Plus. I'm Dan Thomas. Later on in the show, Stefan Owen-Hirk will be joining us to discuss the latest revelations in a very busy, once again, 24 hours in the history of the MLS is Back tournament. Also, Don Hutchinson joining us to reflect on that brilliant 2-2 draw between Napoli and AC Milan. We start, though, in the Premier League. North London derby today saw Arsenal take the lead, but Spurs, coming from behind, take all 3 points with a 2-1 victory. Here to discuss it, Craig Burley, Julian Laron, and Shaka Hislop wearing a West Indies top, and I'm sure everybody knows. However, in the cricket today, the West Indies beat the English, hence Shaka is taking much joy in rubbing that in. I don't think we'll go to Shaka.
That's right.
I don't think we'll go to him for the rest of the show, Craig. Let's start with you and focus on the big talking point of the day. Spurs with the win. This is the Spurs side who we've been very critical of since the break. However, it's the win.
Well, yeah, and a win's a win. And Mourinho said himself it was more of a tactical match as the game went on. It was more about them sitting in. Arsenal in the first period, certainly of the second half, dominated possession. But ultimately, you know, when you make the kind of mistakes that Arsenal made again with that back three system, with the poor marking from the set piece, when you think about the zonal marking, the partial zonal marking from the set piece as Arsenal set up, and then they left Kieran Tierney on Toby Alderweireld, then that's a bit of a mismatch. And, you know, obviously the Kolasinac pass, when he should have went out to Tierney, he should have looked forward first and foremost. But he turned back inside, he took the easy option. Instead, he's sticking it out to the wing-back and getting Arsenal on the front foot. He turned back, played a sloppy pass. And those mistakes cost Arsenal. But let's be frank about it, Dan. You know, both these clubs are chasing Europa League football. And in their current guys, there's none of the two of them are even going to be a threat whatsoever to the domestic league next year in England, because they are so far off the pace. And you could bring any coach in the world in. You could bring in a Klopp or a Guardiola and say, work with these two squads at the moment, and none of the two of them would get within the snowballs of Liverpool and Man City.
Arsenal bad at the back. Shock, Jules.
You're right. It's been the story of the season, really. We thought that maybe the back three or the back five, when the two wing-backs are a bit deeper, could help them, and it certainly looked like it in previous games, although we saw Mustafi being back to his best, I mean, to his worst, really, against Leicester with that mistake at the end that cost them the Vardy goal. And then today, I mean, Kolasinac and Mustafi from start to finish. Not just the poor pass, obviously, from Kolasinac on the first goal, like Craig explained, but Mustafi all game long, was very, very poor. Kolasinac, I thought, never really recovered from that mistake too. And then you've got David Luiz, who is okay in this role as a sweeper, but if the two other centre-backs in the team are not really good, then he struggles and suffers as well. So they will have to really strengthen that department in the summer. Saliba is coming from France. He's very good, but he's very young as well. So who else do you sign? Because you will have to sign somewhere else. There's just no doubt about it.
You just need a complete rehaul there, don't you, Shaq?
You do. And I think both Jules and Craig are being very kind in describing Kolasinac's back pass to David Luiz. I think it's hard to explain how bad a pass that was to go inside when you had acres of space down the left-hand side. Tactically as well, I thought Pepe had the beaten of Davies all day long. Why you don't try to isolate those two a little bit more and get the ball to Pepe, I can't understand or explain. And that's down to Arteta. This game was there for Arsenal to win, but for whatever reason, as the boys described, just poor at the back, and at the same time, I think tactically not good enough and not recognising the mismatches, both out on the wide on the right-hand side and for the set pieces, ultimately cost them. And that's down to Arteta. As good a job as he's done and continues to do, I think this is down to him.
Go on, Craig.
Sorry, any results that these two sides get at the moment, Dan, are just papering over cracks, right? I mean, if supporters get on a high when they go 2-3, maybe even 4 games on a winning streak, which looks damn unlikely, there's no getting ahead of yourself because, as Jules pointed out, there is major surgery needed on both sides. But Jules was touching on Arsenal there. You know, when you see... You know, I actually think their best natural defender is the guy on the bench in Socrates. But clearly, within that system, it's more of an issue for Arteta to get him in the side. Not saying he's the greatest player, but I think he's a more natural defender than any of those three. As for Mustafi, when you think about defenders, and we're talking about a German international here, not a 19-year-old kid who's still learning the game, but a guy who's been there inside the ropes for a long, long time. The amount of decisions he makes poorly in 90 minutes is scary. When you look at the best defender, you might watch Liverpool and watch Van Dijk and a Vincent Kompany at Man City when he was there, and you could maybe sneakily point out a couple of poor decisions that they make or bad areas they get into. But you can look at Mustafi and you could probably point out half a dozen and a half. I mean, the one in the second half where he dived in and Harry Kane out near the touchline was just scary. The list goes on, and these players are going to eventually get you the sack unless you get them out. That's the big problem for Mikel Arteta. Look, he knows this. He's not stupid. But he's a fledgling in this job in terms of being a manager, and he's going to have to learn fast, and he is going to have to make some horrible decisions with some of these players. He's going to really have to show his nasty side, because if he doesn't, he'll be out the door before then.
With your Arsenal ways, Jules, let's get you giving some compliments to Spurs, shall we?
Yeah, although I don't know, I mean, I'm not sure where. Okay, they won the game and they did the same against Everton where they maybe didn't deserve to win that game 1-0 and they won. But this is the same performance as against Bournemouth in midweek. For me, it's exactly the same. Yeah, okay, they got a bit lucky because there's that big mistake on the first goal and Son takes it very well and he scores, and then it's a set piece with Arsenal, as we explained, completely mismatching their marking and putting Tierney on Alderweireld. You know, it's like me marking Xhaka on a corner. It would be completely, there's no common sense in
it. You could jump higher, Jules.
So, I didn't, maybe. There was nothing I saw in this first performance and whatever Mourinho tried to do today to make me think, okay, this is good, this is positive, this is an improvement, this is better. This is the same Spurs team that I've seen since the restart. It's the same Spurs team that I've seen since Mourinho took over back in November. There's just nothing new. There's no pattern of play. Harry Kane, I mean, you've got one of the best strikers in the world and he gets no service. How is that even possible? How is that even possible that Harry Kane, unless he faces Mustafi and by himself creates something, or there's that ball at the end and Martinez came out quite well. But how can you've got Harry Kane in your team and you don't give him anything? Just nothing. No crosses, no through ball, nothing at all. I mean, against Everton, I felt bad for him. I was at the game, I was like, okay, but against Bournemouth, that would be better. Against Bournemouth, the poor kid had nothing. Nothing to do, nothing to use, nothing to aim at. No ball, no service, nothing. And again today. And if I was Harry Kane, I'd be so frustrated and really unhappy by the way my team is playing, and considering I'm not getting any chances, anything at all, to, you know, for me to score to help my team.
If you're just joining us, that graphic is correct. Spurs did win this game by 2-1, despite that.
But they deserve credit for the win, but like Craig said, it's more Arsenal losing that game and like Arteta said, gifting it to Spurs than the other way around, I think.
Let's move on, shall we, to the big result today regarding the race for the top four. And it was a dream result for Manchester United. Leicester 1-0 up, cruising. Looked like they were going to get the 3 points, and they just completely and utterly capitulated in the second half. Sonyoko getting sent off for kicking out. It was just an absolute mess for Brendan Rodgers' side, and they are in real peril now regarding whether or not they will qualify for Champions League football next season. If Manchester United win tomorrow, they win on Monday against Southampton, they move up to third in the table. Craig, this Leicester capitulation, they've won one in their last seven in all competitions.
Yeah, and it wasn't a great weekend for West Ham and Watford, actually, in the end, which it looked like it was going to be a great weekend for them, and it turned out not to be with that ridiculous result, because Bournemouth have been poor as well. I mean, they really have been cannon fodder of late, apart from that Tottenham game, but we've talked about Tottenham. Look, Leicester have lost their mojo. There's no doubt about it. They look fallible at the back. They haven't dominated in the middle of the park. like they did early in the season, where they were very flexible in there with Ndidi and Tielemans. And the wide players with Perez and when he plays, and on the other side, my name escapes me at the moment, but the wide players, Ashley Barnes, Harvey Barnes, they were always a real threat, getting on the front foot. And when they weren't a threat, Vardy was really killing teams in behind. And it's really been a struggle for them. And I said before, Dan, I think with Man United's form and with Man United's fixtures, which is equally as important, that they were going to be tough to stop. And nobody was going to hand Chelsea and Leicester City a place in the Champions League, because United are on the front foot and they've been rolling over these poorer teams in the Premier League, and that's the way the fixtures have fallen, and that continues tomorrow with a decent Southampton side, but it is at Old Trafford. And now all of a sudden it's Chelsea and Leicester City who are under pressure, and Leicester City at the moment look like the team that are going to crack.
And they've got a tough run in as well. Sheffield United, Spurs, and then Manchester United in what we thought was going to be this massive playoff almost for a Champions League place on the final day of the season, Shaq. It might not even get to that.
I don't think it will, given what we've seen from Leicester over recent weeks. Coming out to the break, they were simply terrible. Then they got the result against Crystal Palace, I think it was, and you wondered if things would turn around, but no, it hasn't. And this game kind of sums them up for me. They were in total control, albeit at 1-0. Total control. And then Schmeichel does as he did, straight into the back of Ndidi. And Leicester, you concede one goal, you're still in level pegging. You have the game in your hands. You're by far the better of the two teams. Yet still, you capitulate the way that you do in the end. I mean, it's... And as you say, given the running that they have, you're looking for a positive result for Leicester to build on, but you get that, you get the exact opposite. I think it has a damaging effect. I'm not sure how they get it back together. And as you rightly say again, Dan, in a few days, they may be outside the top four looking for results, looking for favours when they're not doing themselves any.
What was Schmeichel doing, Shaq? Was that just complacency?
I don't know. His distribution has been good. He's been simply outstanding for Leicester for quite some time. But that was just a poor ball. And the weird thing about it is, it wasn't mishit. He struck that as cleanly as he could have hoped. Almost too cleanly, because indeed he didn't have time to get out of the way. So I have no idea what he's looking at, what he was trying to do. But he hit it as he wanted to, and it was just off. That's all I can offer. It was off.
Final word on what's going on in the Premier League. Jules, just to confirm, as we go to broadcast, we're still awaiting the decision from the Court of Arbitration regarding Manchester City's suspension from the Champions League. Rumours over social media over the last three or four days have suggested that ban will be lifted.
Yes, that's right. Although, as Gab Marcotti keeps telling me and texting me, like, no one knows. It's impossible to get any leaks, any idea, nothing. We saw Pep Guardiola being very, very confident. I thought super confident that the ban would be lifted. I don't know. Again, I don't think City know anything. But if they do, and if that's the outcome, then good for them, and they'll be very happy. This is a crucial decision as well for FFP, because if that ban gets lifted and there's just nothing suddenly from City, going from a two-year ban from European competitions and that big fine to nothing, that would make a complete joke of FFP. And I think that would be a really game changer in terms of financial fair play and what teams do to respect it and respect the rules and stay within the rules, because there was clearly an issue at some point, and maybe the first ban was a bit too much. And I think personally that they would reduce the ban from 2 years to 1 year, but at least there would still be something for City. But if there's nothing at all, and if it completely lifted, then that would be a wonderful news first for City. But then I wonder how that would leave the financial fair play.
Be sure to add Craig to that WhatsApp group with you and Gab discussing financial fair play.
He would love it.
He's gagging for it. Just a reminder, we will be discussing that decision on the next edition of the show. Be sure to join us.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
Well, those waking up early this morning to watch Toronto taking on DC United in the MLS Backers tournament were disappointed as the match was postponed. Herc with us and, as always, in Orlando, Stefano Fasoro. Stefano, I want to start with you. What happened?
Well, basically, we arrived there and we were ready to broadcast the game. And about an hour before the game began, we started hearing the rumors that the game might have been postponed. Then, of course, came the confirmation from Deputy Commissioner Mark Abbott, who said that there was one player who tested positive on DC United and one inconclusive test with Toronto FC. And the reason that they postponed the game is because they weren't able to get all the additional testing done required by their protocol to clear both teams and allow them to be on the field playing against each other. Now, they do feel comfortable that they will be able to complete all that additional testing, again, required by their protocol, by tomorrow in hopes of playing that game between DC United and Toronto tomorrow morning.
So in theory, it will just be delayed 24 hours and it will go ahead tomorrow. I understand the thinking there, but is it really going to happen?
It's all about getting the testing done on time, to getting that additional testing ready to go in sufficient enough time to get both teams there and cleared before they're able to step on the field.
Herc, I know you've been talking to a lot of players. How are they feeling about this?
Uneasy, and understandably so. From my understanding, it's going to take a lot more than that 12 to 24 hour period to get the testing results back because of the amount of positive cases in Florida. This is definitely a fluid situation, but the players are uneasy for sure, and not just, I would say, in the bubble. Players that I've spoken to outside of Major League Soccer are worried for the players within Major League Soccer. I could tell you down south, they are not in a bubble themselves, but they are kind of worried about why would you be in a bubble and have that kind of spread go about. So it is a case that's grabbing a lot of attention internationally as well. Listen, and the players I've spoken to, it amazes me how when you look at the DC United Toronto FC situation, Toronto FC didn't even show up. DC United was already prepared to go out and warm up. I believe some of them were already in their warm-up phase. How is this possible? How is it that the lack of communication from above transmitted to the players once they get there, it isn't as fluid as one might think, that they actually think they're going to play, and one team knows they're not going to play? Somewhere along the lines, there is a lack of communication. There is a fault in this system, this process, and it just doesn't go with this DC United Toronto game. We look at the case with Sporting Kansas City. Sporting Kansas City had a positive test, and now they're going to play against Minnesota United today. This is a team that trains together. They eat together. They share the same weight room in a contact sport, and yet only one player has been secluded, and the rest of the players with a virus that may lay dormant up to 5-7 days will now compete today versus another team. Of course, when you see this, it's understandably so that the players feel uneasy.
Stefano, how are MLS? This is becoming an almost worst-case scenario for them.
It really is. And when it comes to Sporting Kansas City, you know, we can really judge the news however we want. But the news is, and according to the league, Sporting Kansas City has gone through the entire protocol of receiving confirmatory negative tests consecutively. And everybody has been cleared to play. That's why they do feel comfortable with Minnesota United, with Sporting Kansas City playing Minnesota United tonight. Here at 8 p.m.
Stefano, I know you're a busy man. I'll let you go. Herc, not busy at all, just lounging around in his Hawaiian shirt. That's pretty much every day for him. Herc, reflecting then on what happened last night, we saw the Red Bulls beat Atlanta by 1-0. Meanwhile, Columbus thrashing Cincinnati, the most goals that we've seen in the game so far, 4-0. Herc, before we talk about those games individually, just overall from the tournament so far, I know you've been talking to some of the players, and the heat is obviously a real issue.
Yeah, it's a huge issue. Almost all the players that I've spoken to, and it's been a lot, overwhelmingly mentioned the heat, mentioned the conditions, mentioned the field being hard to play on. It's very hard. Listen, we've seen the games in about 45 to about 60 minutes in. You already see players cramping. Mm-hmm. Going back to, really quickly, the Toronto DC situation. It's the second time a game's been postponed. Now you have to fit 3 matches in a week span. We've seen how it's gone for these players in one game. They definitely mention the heat, the conditions as a factor. They're not only worried about their safety when it comes to the spread of this virus, they're worried about their safety when it comes to their bodies given out on them. We have to remind people, they did 2 weeks of season, and then it was about a 4-month layoff. They did Zoom trainings by themselves. They almost had little to no team structure trainings. It's a very difficult situation. The only way you're going to get match fitness is by playing these matches. But playing it in this type of heat, this type of humidity, certainly is not ideal. And that's been the major factor going forward, talking to these players, at least on the field.
Well, you looked at that draw and you're really drawn to Red Bulls against Atlanta. You thought this would be a good clash. I don't think many would expect it to be as one-sided as it was, Herc, despite the scoreline.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if that's the case. I definitely knew Atlanta was going to struggle without Joseph Martinez. No Joseph, no party. You can't have that type of player be that impactful to the league, take him out, and not have a replacement and think your team's going to be just fine. Ever since Tata Martino left this team, there have been a lot of doubts with Frank DeBoer's system, the way he plays. But Joseph Martinez has always been the constant. The goals have always been the constant. He's not there. Where are the goals going to come from? He's a lot more important to this team than just scoring goals. His constant movement, his constant hunger of trying to score goals opens things up for so many other players. And that was evident last night. Besides the lack of sharpness, besides the lack of play with the conditions, the heat, the humidity, you can definitely see a team like Atlanta still is trying to figure out how to go about things. And New York is New York. The way they play, the way they exploit spaces, the way they'll press you, and the way they took advantage. I mean, Kaku, that was about as good as a pass as you're going to see, whether it's regular season, you know, 5-6 months in, or the first week of play. It was unbelievable ball threaded through. It was about as typical of a New York performance as you could have gotten.
Meanwhile, Columbus Crew, 4-0, no problem. FC Cincinnati in trouble. We've talked about that so many times before, Herc.
Oh, man. I don't know if Jeff Sims realizes what he's gotten himself into. And listen, before we go into that, honestly, Columbus was my dark horse in this tournament. They're a very good team. Lucas Elarayan is looking like every piece
away,
of designated player. He's looking like every piece of designated player we knew he would be. When he was at Tigres down at Liga MX, he was, I don't want to say underrated, but Tuca Ferretti, the head coach of Tigres, never gave him a legitimate shot of earning that spot. He was a fan favorite for a reason. This guy has got a bag of tricks. He's as technical, as explosive, and as creative as you can get in the final third. And that set-piece goal is about as nice as you're going to see. This team, Columbus, with Yassi Sardis, who just continues to score goals despite the doubters, despite the haters, they've got a legitimate shot in this tournament. They're the first team that's actually played somewhat, you could say, on all cylinders, running all cylinders, and the heat was not an issue to them. The humidity wasn't an issue. If anything, it was an issue for their opponents. I don't know what to say about Cincinnati. Cincinnati has just been one after the other. It's definitely hard on their fans, which has proven to be a very good supporters group, a very good fan base. But when you can't get it right, no matter who the coach is, no matter what the situation, you have to ask yourself, what's going on? Where does it all stem? Talent they have, but for whatever reason on the field, it just doesn't come about.
Hercules Gomez, thank you very much, as always. Just a reminder then, the games continue. ESPN, Tuesday, 9 a.m. Eastern, Chicago Fire taking on Seattle Sounders. Real Madrid have the chance to re-establish a four-point lead at the top of the table on Monday as they're away against Granada. Barcelona, of course, keeping their hopes alive of retaining La Liga title with a narrow 1-0 victory yesterday. But Jules, once again, all the talk about Antoine Griezmann and that substitution at halftime.
Yes, that's right, Dan. He started on his own up front. Luis Suarez was on the bench. Messi was there, but it was not the formation that we saw in the last two games where him and Suarez were playing up front, with Messi in a sort of like free number 10 role in behind them too. That worked really well, especially against Villarreal, not so much in the derby against Espanyol. And he was back to normal being on his own. That didn't work out at all. He had one big chance that he completely missed, and that was pretty much it. He was taken off at halftime, Suarez came on. Not that he did much better than Griezmann, but again, I think he showed that not everything is perfect, that it's still being very difficult for his teammates to find him, for him to be involved in the game and the way Barcelona are playing, which is obviously completely different than anything he's known before at Real Sociedad with France or Atletico Madrid. And he showed that there's still a lot of work to do. Whoever is the manager next season, whatever way the team is playing, he's still far from being really integrated in that team and the way they're playing.
Jules, let's talk of it in injuring his thigh. Is that an excuse? He could miss these final matches?
Yeah, I was told there was a precaution as well taken. He played, I mean, he obviously didn't play against Atletico Madrid until the last few seconds of the game, which was, if you remember, the big outrage and the big game that really seemed to have changed a bit the dynamic there, and he was clearly not happy. But before that, he'd played, you know, quite a lot, in fairness, since the restart, and maybe the accumulation of the games and things like that showed that he had to take a bit of a rest, and that's why he maybe came off at halftime, or maybe Setien was not happy with him, or maybe he just wanted to give another half to Suarez, who also I don't think is fully fit. So we will see in the next game, you know, how they play, and if he starts, if he doesn't start, and what the formation is. But again, it shows how difficult this end of the season is for him, for the team as well, because again, collectively, it was not good at all against Valladolid, you know, this at the weekend. And it has to be a worry, surely, not just the Griezmann case, but everything else as well, apart from Messi in that team.
Meanwhile, Craig, this is the first time I have the opportunity to speak to you about Gareth Bale, who of course went viral when he decided to use his face mask as a sleep mask and pretend to sleep during Real Madrid's victory over Alaves. I'm wondering which side of the fence you stand in this. Is it just a joke and shouldn't be taken too seriously, or is it more serious than that?
Well, maybe Gareth Bale had a bad night's sleep. How the hell do you know, or I know, or anybody else know? I don't know.
What do you mean? What does that mean? He had a bad night's sleep.
Well, he might have been tired. It's like I nod off sometimes, you know, listening to you. Well, so it's like, look, you know, the one thing I'd say with Gareth Bale is I don't know if he's doing these things to stoke, to poke the bear and such, and stoke some controversy. I don't know, but clearly, you know, like leaving grounds early and stuff, which I haven't got a huge issue with. The bottom line is I'm only interested in what players are really doing on the field if they're fit. But ultimately, he has stoked these fires before. And he seems happy with it. You know, he seems happy for them to talk about him, for them to say that it's unprofessional, for them to say that he's not interested, and all the things that go with it. At the end of the day, it's what he does on the field at the moment, or not so much, whatever way he is, if he's not selected or he's injured or whatever. But, you know, for these things to go viral, you know, that tells you all you need to know about modern day society and how bored people are.
Out of all of our pundits, Craig, I would suggest that you would be the most likely to do something like this back in the day.
Well, I didn't intentionally do anything to annoy fans or managers, but I did have one manager who, and I'm not going to mention any names, I did have one manager
John
who
Gregory.
Moved myself.
John Gregory?
I'm not mentioning names.
Okay.
I did have one manager who moved myself and at least one other player from behind the technical area where the players that were not selected used to sit, and he moved us the following week up into the top tier of the stands because it was suggested but not proven that whenever the opposition scored that we were laughing. But that was not proven in a court of law. but you know.
So if Craig is the most likely to go ahead and do this, Shaka's the more likely for this to actually happen and fall asleep on the bench without the intention of doing so, Shaq, given your history of naps that we've seen, considering you missed extra time a few weeks ago because you fell asleep and didn't answer the phone. How close have you been, Shaq, to falling asleep on the bench?
Never, ever have I been close to falling asleep on the bench. I pay very close attention to my nap schedule, Dan. So when I have a game, I make sure and adjust my nap time accordingly. That time with extra time was...
I tell you the giveaway, and we've seen this. We've seen you almost go for a power nap live in the studio in Bristol, Connecticut. And the giveaway is when he has a big sigh and goes, "Oh, good Lord." You know, at that point, there could be a nap coming.
Not in the studio. I've napped in the green room and we've been watching games. I admit that. But not in the studio. Unless I've just come back from Carnival. That happened a couple of times.
Shaq, I haven't heard your point of view on the Bale thing.
Listen, in all seriousness, I think Gareth Bale is doing this to wind people up now. And the one thing that you can't say is that Zidane hasn't given Gareth Bale enough of a chance. He's brought him in. Even when he's come in, he's played well at times, Gareth Bale. But then every time he finds himself out, he does something that It's just, I think, designed to upset everybody, for want of a stronger term, and nothing else. And I think this is just another one of those.
But Jules, he's going to be there next season, isn't he?
I think very certainly, because he doesn't want to leave. He's very happy in Madrid, as in, you know, the city, the life. So is his family. He's on 60 million euros net a year. Sorry. So I don't know at his age, and he's turned 30 now, who will pay that kind of money plus a transfer fee on top to have him in their team. He could have gone to China last summer. Didn't happen. It's very difficult between him and Zidane now, and we've seen Zidane hardly using him since the restart. He came for half an hour against Eibar, started against Mallorca, came off after 70 minutes, and that's it. That's twice in 8 games now. So clearly Zidane, and again, I think, of course, the sleeping thing was a joke, but he was clearly very unhappy after the last substitution that Zidane made, 5 substitution, and pretty much every single forward on that squad, apart from him, came on. Rodrigo and Asensio and Benzema started, then Vinicius came on, Hazard came on, Isco came on, and it was just crazy. And I think I think they lost him in the sense that he knows that he's not going to play. So why bother in a way?
If I was on 60 million euros or about that, Dan, and I was all out of favour with the manager, I would have been through my full regalia of fancy dress costumes to turn up to Real Madrid games.
Wait a moment.
That's a great idea, Bale.
I want to know, what is your wardrobe of fancy dress costumes and where have they come from, Greg? Is this
I go out and I get them. That's what I mean. I would go through my full regalia of from the fancy dress costume shop, and I'd turn up every week with a different one on. That would really be concrete evidence that he wasn't bothered at all. But I think Shaq's right. He's doing it. He's just doing it because he knows he's going to get a reaction now. So the end has been nigh for Gareth Bale at Real Madrid for a while. The problem is, as Jules mentioned, is one, the wages, and two, I actually think he likes being in Madrid. Just not the fact that he's not getting the football that he wants at the moment. But the lifestyle, as you know, is fantastic. The weather's great over there. He gets his golf in, and he has been paid a heck of a lot of money. So it's going to be difficult to see him shifting anytime soon.
Bad news, I'm afraid. We will not see Craig in any fancy dress costume for extra time. Well, certainly today, maybe in the future. You can check that out over on our YouTube channel.
Haaland, De Bruyne, Stevie and Shepherd Spy, Shaka and Naps, all great teammates. But what's the perfect teammate for growing your business? Well, that's Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. Shopify makes it easy for you to show up exactly the way you want to. Customize your online store to your style with gorgeous, flexible templates and powerful tools. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Plus, Shopify's extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/FC. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/FC now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/FC.
The big game on ESPN Plus today saw AC Milan take on Napoli. This one finished 2-2. Great game as Don joins us to reflect on it. Don, you reckon 2-2, a fair result?
I think just about, Dan. I mean, it was a strange game. It was a brilliant game, but 3 of the 4 goals all went against the run of play. Napoli started the game, the first 15 minutes, on fire. I mean, Dries Mertens and Insigne were creating chances left, right and centre, and Donnarumma was pulling off saves. And then Callejon missed an absolute sitter from about 2 or 3 yards. And then Milan scored a great goal, Rebic assist, Hernandez with a volley at the far post. It was just a sensational game, 1-1 at half-time, and then Milan were the best side by far in the second half. Napoli then took the lead, and then it took a penalty to get Milan back into the game. So a real fascinating game. A shame it ended 2-2, but I think it was just about the right result.
Donnarumma obviously disappointed, weren't he, with that goal that he conceded, the second for Napoli?
Yeah, he was. I mean, it's one of them ones where if you're a goalkeeper, the free kick was swung in with so much pace and it was really flat. And he was probably expecting runners to come across him. So you either try and judge the flight of the ball or you try and judge if a Napoli player is going to get their head on the end of it. And he sort of flapped at it and it sort of just dropped down and Di Lorenzo got a tap in. But he had a really good game, Donnarumma.
Meanwhile, penalty for you, the late pen, Don?
100%, yeah, 100%.
Why do you show your head and say 100%? Surely you say 100%.
100%.
It's like secret code. Save me now.
I think I was shaking my head at the defender for making a tackle when he should have just stayed on his feet. And Bonaventura just got a penalty and it was like, what are you doing? Just stay on your feet.
Obviously, both of these teams very close regarding their league positions. Who's better set, do you feel, going forward? A lot of talk about some big Napoli players being linked away from the club. Meanwhile, Milan, new coach, you imagine, coming, and that's certainly what we've heard. Yet another summer of rebuilding.
Yeah, I think starting on Napoli, I mean, go back to Maurizio Sarri, and he played exactly the same system as Gattuso's playing, and then Carlo Ancelotti then come in and sort of ripped the 4-3-3 up and went to a 4-4-2. And I was watching Napoli and I was thinking they've never been a 4-4-2 side. So Gattuso's now come in, he's playing the same system with more or less the same players, and they look like the old Napoli. And Milan, I think if you're a Milan fan, you can be optimistic. The club was probably in financial ruin 2 or 3 years ago, and now they've got an age profile, apart from Zlatan, obviously. But the rest of the players are young, they're exciting, they're vibrant. You know, they've got some real talent and they're competing. I don't think, obviously, they're finished product yet. It might take them a little while to get going. But I think if you're a Milan fan, you can see shoots of progress.
The one thing with Napoli, which people aren't talking about as much, I feel, at the moment, is that clash against Barcelona. 1-1, of course, set up for the second leg in the Champions League. Barca all over the place, completely at the moment, scraping victories against mediocre sides in La Liga. If you're Napoli, you think we go there, we get organised, we put pressure on them. There's a big argument to say they could pull off an upset in this one.
They could, because they're a talented side. And when you've got, you know, talented players on the pitch, especially in the middle of the park, you think they can create chances. Koulibaly's an absolute rock at the back, one of the best centre-halves in world football. And then you think of Insigne, Arkadiusz Milik, Dries Mertens, Callejon. They've got enough at the top end of the pitch to worry anyone. It's just on their day, can they do it? Because they've lost some bad games in Serie A this season, which the Napoli side should never, ever be losing. But against the very best side, you would always give Napoli a chance because of that forward line.
Don, as always, thank you very much. Italian action then continues on ESPN Plus tomorrow. Inter Milan just trying to get something going a little bit, playing host to Torino. That game live, 3:45 Eastern on ESPN Plus.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. That brings to the end of today's show. Thank you very much to everyone who's been on. Big programme tomorrow, of course, that Manchester City decision, Real Madrid and Manchester United in action as well.
But stay tuned, Extra Time is next with Jules and Craig. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you as always for your tweets. Craig and Jules with me. Craig, will no European football be a good thing for Arsenal?
Why?
Well, I suppose if you're not in the Europa League, not in the Champions League, you don't have to faff about during the week and just concentrate on the 38 Premier League games.
Won't make a big enough difference to that squad, to be quite frank. The squad, the squad depth and the squad quality is not good enough. There are a lot of good players there, or certainly a few, and certainly some good youngsters, but I don't think it would matter much to their season if they were missing out in the Europa League, because the same players are probably going to be making the same mistakes next season as they have been this season. The only upside so far for Arsenal that I can see is the experience some of the younger players are getting. And of course, they've got the issue with Aubameyang, who they're going to have to try and keep, and we don't know how that's going to unfold. So, yeah, they've got a new management in. I think there's a bit of a new management structure. They've got some kids getting game experience, but they've got too much dead wood, and whether in Europe or not, it's not going to make that big a difference, in my opinion.
Mind you, Jules, if I'm an Arsenal fan, I don't want them anywhere near the Europa League next season.
Yeah, I get that side of the argument. You're right in the sense that if you only have one game a week in the Premier League at the weekend, that leaves you far more time to work on things that you want to work at training, which you can't do if you play midweek in Europe and you have to travel, and basically your days are only warm downs pretty much until the next game. So more time to work. I do think that even the Europa League for any club is quite good, and also with a bit of luck, if you win it,
they were very close of winning it. It just gets in the way, doesn't it? It's just there.
Yeah, but if you win the Europa League, if you've got a bit of luck, maybe, and you play well in that kind of competition, you qualify for the Champions League, which I doubt they would do through the league even next season. So maybe that's a way of seeing it. But I think you're right. If you had to go pros and cons, the fact that you can just solely focus on the Premier League, having the whole week to prepare your games at the weekend in the Premier League domestically, I think that probably has a biggest advantage than to have to play on Thursday night in the Europa League and then on Sunday again in the league.
I just one second, Dan. Clearly you don't want to be, clearly playing on a Thursday and playing on a Sunday is a disadvantage, and you know the extra games are more problematic. I'm not saying it's not more problematic. It is, because obviously you're playing more games, you're more tired, and you're more likely to get injuries. But let me paint it a different way. And as Joe's mentioned, it gives you longer in the week to work in your team. The Arsenal issue, team-wise, is not a structural issue. It's an individual issue. So you can work all week on back threes and wing backs and 3-4-3s and 3-5-2s and back fours. You can do it. You can do all that Monday to Friday, twice a day. But it has little effect if the same individual players are making individual errors. Mm. So then it's not a structural, it's not a back four not operating together. It's not a holding midfield, not shielding the back four. It's the same people making the same mistakes. And that's not a time thing. That's just an individual thing. And I think that's the biggest issue for Arsenal. And then by that, I'm pointing the finger at the back three in particular David Luiz.
Mustafi.
And who was the other one today again?
Kolasinac.
That's pointing at those three. They'll make the same mistakes next week, next season, whether they get all week off to train or whether they're in Olympiacos on a Thursday.
How come last year everyone was being harsh on Sarri, even though he got the top four and won the Europa League, but this season no one is talking about Lampard's mistakes, Craig?
Right, let's just get this one out of the way, because clearly people that are tweeting this kind of garbage in have no understanding of the situation. Right. And none of us here are Donna Parke, that is, a Frank Lampard apologist. but let me paint a slightly different picture, because I know you discussed this with Stevie, I think, regarding Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And it's somewhere similar. Frank Lampard is not going to be beyond criticism if their season unravels. But let me just answer these ludicrous tweets, and this one in particular. Chelsea Football Club lost their best player last season, a player that carried them for over 5 years, who went to Real Madrid, and they had a transfer ban. On top of that, they brought in a manager who's only got 1 year experience in management, and that was in the Championship. Right. There's the difference between a team that was signing players, didn't lose the best player, didn't have a transfer ban, and had a manager who'd been managing for years. Comprende?
However, this is a manager that took them to third, and he's only lost Eden Hazard. I know it's only, but he's done so well with his side, and it just seems to have fallen apart at the wrong time of the season. He's a victim of his own success, I get that, but even so, it's a massive disappointment if they don't make it into the Champions League, surely.
Yeah, but it is a massive disappointment if they don't make it in, but I've already painted the picture of losing your best player and having a transfer ban, and having to bring in Tammy Abraham to lead the line, who was on loan at Aston Villa. Mason Mount, who's played in every Premier League game, who was on loan at Derby County. You know, in an ideal world, like Man United, who go out and sign the big money, Harry Maguire, and then go out and bring in, you know, one of the most sought-after attacking midfielders in Bruno Fernandes. You know, Chelsea didn't have that luxury. So that's the difference between the scenarios. And if people can't understand that, I'll get to the point straight away. They're just thick.
60 million they did spend on Pulisic, though. They did bring in. They did bring in a player, didn't they? Isn't this if they didn't just bring in and didn't have a chance to bring in anybody?
But they had a transfer ban. That's my point.
Yes, but they brought in a new player.
Still had a transfer ban. Honestly.
But he's still got the same defence that he had last year. That hasn't changed. Yet they seem to be so porous at the back now.
But that might not be the players that he wants to work with. Just because you've got the same defence doesn't mean that's the same players that you want to work with. And clearly he's searching between that back line, between that back four. We know they've had a problem at left back. We know Alonso's better as a wing back. He's tried everything at the moment. Rudiger's gone from being their most solid defender to a guy who was making mistakes. Then there's Zouma. Then there's Christensen. Then there's young Tomori, who was on loan at Derby County with them. So it's not a free pass for Lampard. Absolutely not. But correct me if I'm wrong, as we speak at the moment, they are in the Champions League football, and factually, they did have a transfer ban. Now, if you're telling me that's not the case, I'll hold my hands up and apologise. If not, stop driving the bus down the wrong road.
Thanks, Don. Meanwhile, thoughts on Messi breaking the assist record when Barcelona are struggling, Jules? He won't care about that, will he, at all?
I don't think so. I don't think he's chasing those kind of records, which is pretty incredible if you think 20 goals and 20 assists minimum, at least in one domestic season. I think only Thierry Henry did it with Arsenal in that quite incredible 0-3 season, where he scored, I thought it was 33 goals and 20 assists, and they didn't win the league that season. And maybe Messi, with all those numbers, is not going to win the league, which would be a shame, but he shows what a dysfunctional team he is in, really, because despite those incredible numbers and his incredible performances, they're still struggling. They're struggling to play together as a collective. They're struggling to stay in touch with Real Madrid to try and go and win the league. And I don't see them winning the Champions League either this season after the draw on Friday. So he must be thinking, like, come on. I mean, there's not more he can give, really, to that team. And yet, it's still a team that is struggling at times to win games. And it's incredible. And if you think on top of that, and it's got nothing to do with your question, I'm sorry, but that the last Champions League they won was in 2015, and they've had Messi for all those years, and they really only have won three since he broke through that first team, or four since this, if you count the 06 one. It's incredible that they didn't win more.
We remember that Champions League final very well.
Craig, you've completely put me off what I was going to ask. Right, if you're Lionel Messi,
I know what you're going to ask me, because I've been doing this job too long. I know what you're
35
like.
35 years, I heard.
37.
37 years.
You're going to ask me, is it time to go to pastures new before the end of his career?
Yes.
There is an argument to say yes. I think the club, the supporters, and all that are still the draw for him, but I don't think there's, as Joe said, there is any doubt about the frustration, about where the team has been going, about the signing policies, about the management, about the president, about the director of football, I think it was at the time, Eric Abidal, making statements about players. The whole thing's been a real mess. That being said, they're not 15 points off the league, but they're unlikely to be domestic winners this year. And they're not favourites for the Champions League. But it's whether somebody else can come up with the money with the wages or the transfer fee to be able to buy, you know, the biggest game changer in world football. And, you know, would he fit in Man City under Guardiola and be unbelievable? Absolutely. But they've got all this financial fair play hanging over them with the Court of Arbitration for Sport and their argument with UEFA. Just who can this guy go to? He's not going to go to Real Madrid. Could Juventus, you know, somehow wangle financial fair play when they've already managed to do it for Ronaldo? I mean, could they pair those two up? I don't think so. So he's probably going to end up staying, I would imagine.
Where could he go, Jules?
I think if he announces that he's leaving Barcelona, I think his phone will never stop ringing, and his dad's phone and his brother's phone will never stop ringing. I think everybody will try to convince him to join them. I don't think many teams can really afford him, but it depends how much money he wants. It depends on a lot of things, but you would think that the day he decides to leave Barcelona, whenever that is, not this summer, I still don't think the following summer, when you'll have the new elections and potentially a new president, and with Xavi coming as the team manager. So maybe the one after that, but he will have to go back to Argentina, you know, finish there his career. I think that's always been really the idea and the plan. And it would be right. I don't think it would be right for him to go and sign for any other European club. I think MLS is always a possibility, but you would think that just the thought of going home and finishing in there with the whole family there will probably get his favourite choice.
With all the controversy regarding handballs this weekend, do you believe that the fouls should be changed or enforced differently? Of course, Atalanta against Juventus, two huge decisions there. And we've seen Italy giving them all season, Craig. Wherever they are, pretty much, if it hits it, it's going to be a penalty. Like, in your ideal world, how do you fix this?
Cheers. Well, look.
I'll leave you this one.
Certainly penalties. You can't be given penalties when an arm is across your body, you know, because clearly it's going to strike your body anyway. So it's a difficult one. We've been through all the silhouette conversation last summer. I just don't know. I would have to sit down and spend some time thinking about how the handball law is going to have to be revamped. And I'm clearly not going to do that.
I was going to say, that's your evening sorted. Nice sit down, WhatsApp with Gab and Jules, talk about it all.
Beers, cut the beers, sit down.
Can't wait.
You know, chat about. Well, I could even throw in a bit of financial fair play, because that we know that's a stimulus for Marcotti.
And also the Ballon d'Or.
Yeah, Ballon d'Or. Expected goals.
Yeah,
Usain Bolt.
Expected goals. That's why our boss drops it in the bottom of the graphic. But if he drops it any lower, I'm going to drop kick it into touch.
Here we are then, Craig. It's the question that a lot of people are asking you at the moment. Have you changed your opinion about Ollie at United? Is he the right man for the job?
I haven't changed my opinion, no. And I saw a ridiculous tweet from our Twitter feed yesterday, saying if the Premier League had started in February, Man United would be X, Y, Z, this, that, that. Well, the Premier League does not start in February. What an utterly stupid thing to say. If it starts in February, United would be this. I mean, look, I sat here when the restart happened and said, look at United's fixtures. They've got the easiest fixtures out of the lot. Right. So they're going to get on the front foot. They are on the front foot. They may get the top four. We don't know yet. It looks likely. However, next season, if they can peg back Man City and Liverpool, who'll probably go again in the transfer market, certainly City will, and I expect Liverpool to do some business, then I'll acknowledge it. But until that time, I'm not going to acknowledge a side who, as we speak at the moment, are sitting in fifth in the Premier League. No.
Of course, that could all change on Monday as they take on Southampton. The chance to move up to third in the Premier League for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's
side. Wow!
We will be back tomorrow. Are you on tomorrow, Craig, to discuss that?
I haven't looked. I looked at the schedule when it came out on Friday.
Yeah.
And I can't remember exactly what it says.
Good.
but I'm not sure. I don't know.
I imagine it'll definitely say, it'll say golf in the morning, handball law discussion with Jules and Gav.
I know I'm off on Thursday.
What's happening on Thursday?
And I was off yesterday.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Right, that's it.
So
good.
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
We maybe Craig. Will, God, how will we sleep at night, not knowing what? Whether Craig will be on tomorrow? But we'll try our best. Be sure to join us as we'll be reflecting on that United game, Real Madrid in action as well, plus the results from the Court of Arbitration regarding Manchester City's ban.